All right, Mark chapter 10, starting in verse 32. I'm going to read it and then we'll talk about it a little bit. Before I read it though, let me set it in its context. Okay, Jesus is on his way to doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves, which is to provide a sacrifice necessary for us to find approval with him. So he's going to Jerusalem to substitute himself for us as a sacrifice. He realizes what he's doing. He knows the implications of the trip. Those who are with him are struggling with those implications. And they were on the road. Now, I circled that in my Bible. Road. They're on a journey. They're on a path. Something very similar. In fact, this is where it comes from. It comes from a passage like this. Something that's descriptive of our relationship with the Lord. Each and every one of us who have a relationship with the Lord through Jesus. It's a journey. It's a path. It's walking toward conformity to Christ. They were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. And they were amazed. And those who followed were afraid. And taking the 12 again, he began to tell them what was going to happen to him, saying, "See, we are going up to Jerusalem," and you always go up to Jerusalem. "We are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he'll rise." James and John. Another scene. James and John, sons of Zebedee, came to him and said to him, "Teacher, we want..." Now, I circled those two words in my Bible as well. "We want." "We want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one on your right and one on your left in your glory." So their understanding is this: when the Messianic kingdom comes, they want to sit in the positions of power. They want shotgun. Jesus said to them, "You don't know what you're asking. I'm about to drink a cup of the wrath of God. And I'm about to be submerged into the waters of judgment. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" And they said, "We're able." And Jesus said to them, "Your time's coming. The cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or my left, that's not mine to grant. But it is for those for whom it has been prepared." And when the 10 heard it, the other 10, they were indignant. Don't you love that word? Don't you hate that word? Don't you love that word? Don't you hate it? It's so descriptive, isn't it? Such a good word and such a bad word. Indignant. They were indignant at James and John. And Jesus called them to him and said to them, "You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But you're different. It's not so among you. If you want to be great, be a servant." That word's in there, the word want. And if you want to be first, be the slave. For even the Son of Man, the glorious Son of Man, the Son of Man of Daniel chapter 7, verse 14, that Son of Man, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now this next little paragraph seems detached from the previous paragraphs, but it's not. By its language, it's definitely attached to the previous two. Actually, previous three. And they came to Jericho. And as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, the son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And many rebuked him, telling him to be quiet. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped. Bartimaeus stopped him in his tracks. Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up. He is calling you." And throwing off his cloak, the only thing that he owned probably, he sprang up and he came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "What do you want? What do you want? What is it that you want? What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "Rabbi, I just want to be human again. I just want to be fully human. I want to have my eyes. Because I know you didn't create us to be blind. You created us to have sight, and I want to see." And Jesus said to him, "Go your way. Your faith has made you well." And immediately, he could see. And when he could see, he saw Jesus. And when he saw Jesus, he followed him on his way. We'll go back and try to explain some of this in a second. Let me tell you a couple of stories first. This is about, these stories relate to Jesus leading us in the way and the kind of emotions that are expressed in that first verse that I read. The amazement and the fear. First of all, I don't think we understand completely. I don't know that we'll ever understand completely the nature of Christ's death. We definitely appreciate sacrifice. All of us can appreciate sacrifice. All of us can appreciate the Marine who goes to Afghanistan and gives his life in a noble cause. We can understand that. We deeply appreciate that, and we should. What we don't necessarily think about when we think about Jesus' death is how undignified it was, how dishonorable it was, how horribly atrocious it was. Any death is atrocious on the battlefield, but this death, he was completely humiliated. And knowing that, he went. He walked right into it. And others went with him. They followed him. They were afraid. They were amazed. But they followed. Judy got me a bike for Christmas. A bicycle. One without a motor. One that I have to provide the energy to make it go. There's a reason for that. She got me a bike. So, she expects me to ride that bike everywhere because, well, you just have to know Judy. She's not here. I can say whatever I want. And I'll deny everything. She bought me this bike, and she said, I want you to ride this bike. So I ride it to my favorite restaurant every morning. And, well, I have for 2 days. I mean, it's been raining, okay? So some days it's cold. So I'm riding the bike, and I'm like everybody else. I'm looking for the shortest point between point A and point B. Okay. Well, Max, bless his heart, he pointed out this alley that goes almost straight from out here to right down to Hoyt. It's just almost straight. Okay, it's an alley. So the other day I rode. What am I doing? Which am I wrong? It's that way. Well, see, I started that. No, I'm kidding. That way. Okay, I went. Yeah, it's that way. Of course it's that way. I was testing you guys. You passed. So, yeah. Yeah, so I'm going this way, okay? Down the alley. And going is fine. I just go fine, okay? And I have my breakfast, and then I'm on my way back. Well, as I'm on my way back on my bike, I get just to the last, the last segment. It's divided into segments where the street intersects. Okay, I get to the last segment, and I'm about to go into the alley, and I see this. Now, it's not a human. It's this big dog. Big dog. We're not talking little dog. We're talking about big dog. Has muscles like Clark Skinner. Big dog with muscles. That big dog redirected my route. I went around and not through. Now that's okay if it's a big dog. I understand. I mean, I hope you understand that was probably the wise thing to do. Jesus went right straight toward the dog. He went right into the jaws of the dog. He walked through the valley of the shadow of death, and death enveloped him. And he wants us to walk with him. He wants us to walk that same path. Now, what's the difference is this, that Jesus is with us. Jesus is leading the way. Jesus, that's discipleship, though. That's discipleship, is walking with him into anything. And it sometimes it's danger. It's dangerous, like this dog. And sometimes it's beautiful. I mean, the scenery is just breathtaking. Okay, it's a path that leads us to a lot of different places in life, isn't it? Isn't that what discipleship is? It's discipleship. And what I mean by that is that being a disciple is being a student of Jesus. But in this particular curriculum, it's so much more than just what you learn up here. It has to filter down into your heart, and it defines who you are as a person. Okay, that's the kind of teaching and learning we're talking about. And when you finally get it, you're willing to go anywhere that Jesus wants you to go, and you're willing to do anything that he wants you to do. And what he wants from us more than anything else is to be people who want him and want to help others and want to be others-oriented kind of people. Isn't that what this passage is saying? Let's go back and look at it real quick. I think you'll get what I mean. They were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them, and there are all these emotions. I mean, just all these emotions, because he was pretty clear about where he was going and what was going to happen to him. And he's also very clear about the fact that he wanted them to go with him, and he wanted them to understand what he was doing. And so he took them aside and began to tell them what would happen to him. And he said, "We're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes." Now, there's irony. The Bible drips with it. This thing called irony. This stuff that's so unexpected, it just doesn't, just on the face of it, just doesn't make sense. The chief priests, the scribes, the experts, the guardians of the Jewish religion, the people who should have received him warmly, who should have opened the door of their hearts to him gladly, and they hated him, despised him. And I don't want to be superficial about it, because I think that people can get real superficial when you just blame religion for everything. But when there's a religion that's devoid, that doesn't have the substance that we have in Jesus Christ, and that becomes lifeless, and it becomes and people who are religious people without life become jealous and defensive and intensely angry, and they want to remove this threat. They saw Jesus as a threat. They should have seen him as their savior, and they saw him as a threat. He should have been their hero. And they saw him as their enemy. Imagine that. I mean, he was there on the mountain when Moses gave the law. The Bible says that he is the very embodiment of the law, the fulfillment of the law. He is everything that these people would have hoped for or should have been. And they condemned him to death. And he put up with it. He absorbed the hostility, the anger, the fury. Has anybody ever experienced anything like that, where you've had somebody really, really, really mad at you and you wanted to take their head off? Of course, if you're passive aggressive, you don't want to do that. You'll wait and stab them in the back later. But it's human nature to be inclined toward when an injustice is done to us, we want to lash out. Check out the composure, the poise of Jesus Christ, the self-control. Don't tell me, don't try to convince me, you won't do it. That the capacity for an angry response wasn't there. That's what it means to be fully human. He knew human temptation. But because he loves us, he resisted it. They will condemn him in a twisted turn of events. The very ones who should have welcomed him will condemn him. And then, because they don't have the power to put him to death, they'll hand him over to the Gentiles. And they'll mock him. Never a delightful experience. Do you realize this? Jesus allowed himself to be bullied. How many of you in here just hate the idea? Oh, just show me a bully and you will see the veins start popping out in my neck. I hate that. I hate that more than anything else. I hate those who take advantage of others who are weak and vulnerable. Look at this, though. Jesus chose weakness and vulnerability. He allowed himself to be bullied, mocked. Ever been spit on? If you've had a big brother, you've known this. Okay, if you've had a big brother, you've had your big brother sit on you, sit over you, and pretend like he's going to spit on you. And even sometimes, I don't want to be gross or anything, but even sometimes, you know, let that spit come out just before it gets to your face and then suck it in. Tell me you guys have experienced that, okay? Well, maybe you haven't experienced it, but I'm telling you, when you have little brothers, that's the kind of thing you do to them. There's nothing worse than being spit on. Oh, it's horrible. It's a horrible indignity. And Jesus absorbed the indignity without lashing out. And they beat him. They flogged him. They killed him. And he never did anything to resist any of it. But kept in 1 Peter, kept entrusting himself to the one who was going to take care of him. And he did. And he did a really good job because 3 days later he rose from the dead. Okay, so Jesus lays this out. Okay, he lays this out in no uncertain terms. This is what's going to happen to me. This is what you guys are going to experience. Be ready for this. And James and John say, walk up and say, can we have the best seats in the house? Can we ride shotgun? Can we have the box seats? We don't want to sit in the bleachers. We want to sit in the box seats. Does anybody else see that as just a little bit inconsistent with where Jesus is going? This is what we want. This is what we want. This is what we want. Now I'm going to make a confession to you, and if you haven't figured this out, hopefully in time you won't. But in the past up to the present, I have been a bottomless pit of want. I want this and I want that. I want to go there and I want to go here. I want to do this and I want to do that. I want this and I want that. I want, I want, I want, I want, I want. A bottomless pit of want. James and John were conditioned by their want to. I want to do this. I want this. I want it. Jesus said, first of all, you don't have any idea what you're asking for. And secondly, even if you did, I wouldn't be able to give it to you because it's not my prerogative to give it to you. And then he said this, and it extends to us today in very real way, very, very real way. He said, look, you guys are different. To the point of being strange. Now, for some of you, that's not a big deal. You're used to being strange. But we're not talking about that. We're not talking about your looks or your personality so much as we're talking about what's inside your heart, what controls you, what controls the attitudes and the actions of an individual. Jesus said, you know, in the world then, in the world now, people just love to be on top. They love to call the shots. They love control. Don't you love control? Don't you love control over somebody, being able to move a person like that person is a chess piece or a checker? Just move them wherever you want to. Well, actually, you can't do that in chess or in checkers, but move them, you know, move them around. You go here, you go here, you go here. You say, you're not like that. You're not like that. You don't ask, what's in it for me? That's not the question that you ask. You don't ask, how can I get what I want? You ask, how can I help someone else? How can I serve someone else? And think about the power behind Jesus' words, because think of what he was doing. This is the most unselfish act ever. You see, there's a problem with this little group of people. And did you notice? Selfish people tend to create a lot of controversy and a lot of problems, don't they? I want this, I want that. And then they run up against somebody else who wants this and wants that. And what do you have? When you have two people that want something and they want the same thing, what do you have? You have this word, indignation. You have all kinds of strife and division and anger and bitterness, and just look at every church that's ever existed and you'll see it, because I want what I want. And I recognize in most Christian people, including myself, it's just a lack of maturity. It's just not understanding where God's taking us. He's taking us to a point where our wants aren't nearly as important as what he wants for us. And what he wants for us is to be givers and not takers. To see how we can help others and not just help ourselves. That's where he wants to take us. That's the path we're on. And so we have to embrace an attitude. And what is the attitude that we have to embrace? It's the attitude of the blind beggar. Notice the contrast. Where's the blind beggar sitting? On the path, the most undignified place that he could possibly be. In contrast to James and John, who want these seats at the right and the left. Now, if you develop this contrast between James and John and the beggar, who's got the best seat? Well, the beggar has the best seat, right? Oh, hey, look. It's confusing, I know. It's turning the world upside down. It's not how we think. It's not natural to us. It's unnatural. Instead of being blindly ambitious, Jesus wants us to be blind beggars looking for sight, looking for the ability to see. He was sitting on the roadside in a pitiful, pathetic state. Everybody would have felt sorry for him. You don't feel sorry for the guys that are sitting at the right hand and the left hand of Jesus. Sitting there. Jesus comes up to him and says, after he had cried out, after he had begged, he's begging for Jesus' attention. He knows that Jesus can do something for him, and he's begging him. And Jesus comes up to him and says, what do you want? See, Jesus is asking him what he wants. It's the reverse of James and John. Jesus comes to him and says, what do you want? And the beggar says, I just want to see. And when he gets his sight, he follows. Gets on that path and follows. When we get on that path and follow, it turns all our want-tos upside down. We start wanting different things than what we wanted before. The closer you get to Christ, the more you see those want-tos changing. And the more you're willing to bring about what Jesus wants. You see? You see it? Do you see it? If you don't see it, then take the posture of the blind beggar. Jesus, have mercy on me. I need to see this. I need to see that you want me to be different than most of the people that I come in contact with. I need to see that I'm different than most of the people that I go to school with. I need to see that I'm different than some of the people that I go to church with. I need to see that I'm different than most of the world. That I'm not supposed to be out for myself. But I'm supposed to be interested in the welfare of others. First and foremost. You see? If you don't see, pray. God, have mercy on me. I'm blind. My ambition is getting in the way. Sometimes you just want to be best, don't we? How many of you would just love to be, don't raise your hand, please, don't. Just love to be the best at something. How many of you would just love to be the very, very best at something with all the perks that that brings? I want to be the best. I want to surpass everybody else. I just want to be the best. If you've ever been involved in a sport and taken it seriously, you've embraced that mentality. Well, in and of itself, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's how far you take it. Right? Somebody's got to lose. One last question. Was Jesus a loser or a winner? just depends, doesn't it? On which point in this story you want to point to. He lost so that he could win. Let's pray. Oh, Father, I'm the chief of sinners. So selfish and desires that are so much in contrast with what you want. But I thank you that you love me enough, just like you love your people in this room enough, to teach us not just a better way, but the best way. The way of selfless sacrifice for the sake of others. And Jesus, I thank you that you're not saying that from the perch down to the peons, but you're saying that as one who endured such indignities so we could be saved. We are blind and we need to see. We're empty and we come to you to be filled. And we come to you this day in your name and for your sake. Amen.